times when you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff about how there's so much that is passed down to their and that so much of the history we have is because we're fantastic enough that we
Hey, what's up? We're live. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. I'm wearing this hat just for my wife. She said, "You look cute in that hat." So I said, "Honey, I'll wear this hat for you."
Listen to the wife.
Yeah. Joe's doing well.
Joe's doing well.
Yeah. Temperature started to dip a little bit.
Yeah. Give me a 60 degree day and then give me a 20 degree. That's not fair.
Yeah. No, that's totally mean. So in Joe's space and sphere, we're through the New Year's resolutions. We're coming out of February here in a couple days, and we're going to be into the third month of the year. So we're coming into the bones of the year. What has Joe felt like, man, I've accomplished, this has been great. What are the things that seem to be elusive thus far? And are you reevaluating goals yet? Are you doubling down on anything? Where are you kind of at?
So this time, like typically when you sort of like shake things up, you're it's different, but you know, like if you didn't do anything, it would kind of gravitate back into where you were before if you didn't do anything. But I think I messed up my default so bad that I don't know what I would gravitate back to. So everything from my finances, I changed it. So there's not even a default there's in the health thing, in the eating thing, like I don't go back to doing a thing. It's the weirdest phenomenon that I don't identify as anything. I broke it so bad that it doesn't have an identity.
Awesome. Well, I'm getting ready to recalibrate and do a 30-day physical challenge for myself that I'm getting ready to lay out.
Let's hear it.
It's going to involve an eating regimen. Okay. It's going to involve some exercise, but I'm really trying to focus on the food side of things. And I've told myself, hey, we're going to do 30 days. I'm going to do scale picture stuff before, after, and just really hone in, put my head down, do the work. 30 days. Let's knock it out and see what happens. I haven't been in the gym since Thanksgiving time ish, just before Christmas, right after, those holidays kind of slowed me down. And then I was like, I mean, I'm still making my donation every month, so I feel good about that.
You're supporting them and keep your lights on,
you know,
philanthropic.
Yeah. My wife goes every day, but, realistically for me to get into a spot, she's getting ready for this 5K and I'm really excited for her. She did a 5K years ago. I think it was right before Charlotte was born. I think it was right after. And then she hasn't done anything since the boys were all born. So this is her first big one since, being a mom before and all that. And she seems really excited about it. She's getting in a good rhythm. I bought her some new gear. But I'd like to, a part of watching her has been like kind of inspiring. And I'm like, I hate running, but I kind of want to do that with my wife. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So nothing in me is like, let's run.
That's a good question, because my wife and I had a discussion very similar to this. Now, throughout all of that personal training and all that stuff that you put, was there any parts of it that you really, really liked? Where you would do it if it were outside of a regimen, you'd do it anyway?
Hanging out with people.
Just the people part.
You tolerate the exercise
to hang out with
the running joke when I went to the gym when I was playing football in high school, or just going to the gym in general, or even in college. Like they're like, "Oh, Reed, you working your mouth muscle today?" Well, of course I am. Like that's why I'm here. And I happen to work out my chest or my biceps or whatever when I do it. And when I have a partner or two, you have the accountability to show up. You have the social currency. That's why I'm there. And inevitably, if my partner's like, "Hey, I can't make it today," I'm like, "Well, guess I'm not going to the gym." But there's nothing for me on the physical end of things that I'm like, "Oh, I really want to do X or do Y, or I want my body to look a certain way." And I've never been in that category. But if I can do something that's going to make me a little healthier, I need to attach social value to it because of the way that I'm wired.
All right. So people,
which is completely opposite for you,
yeah,
Joe.
Right. So and this is a phenomenon. Like people are natural martyrs. Like they take a thing that they know that they should do and they make it as painful as possible so they can feel in that pain. So my wife and I have these morning discussions about everything that we did from a responsibility standpoint. Is there everything we did that we can make a little easier, a little bit more enjoyable? We're able to scoot things that we are awful, but we tolerate, to something that we don't mind. And then some of the stuff, we get it to the point, because in comparison to the hard stuff, it became so easy. It's like, I don't really even mind it, but I kind of like it. It's kind of fulfilling a little bit. I'll give you an example, and it's a stupid example, but it'll at least illustrate it. So when a lot of people, especially when they came from old school, there was scarcity, right? And so when they did a load of laundry or they washed dishes or whatever, they would make sure it was so full, so they would take advantage of every drop of detergent and water, right? Now, I wash things, and there might be four things, and I was like, there's some people on this planet that would be shaking their head at me right now that I just ran the whole dishwasher for four things. And I'm thinking, hey, you know what? I left a gift for myself. Tomorrow when I unload the dishwasher, there's going to be four little things in there, and I'm going to walk up to it, and it's going to be so easy, just because I didn't wait until it was hard. I did it when it was nice and easy.
Yeah. You know, there's an opposite approach to this. So you mentioned old school.
Yes.
And I've mentioned this guy before, but a former Navy SEAL, David Goggins, and he has a saying that when he coaches people and in his books and his talks, he says, if it doesn't suck, we don't do it. It's kind of his approach, because you want to find out what you're made of, and you have to put your body through things, particularly physically, that you don't think you're capable of and that you don't want to do. And he tries to do something that he doesn't want to do every single day, something that he hates. And I've thought about that a lot, because I feel like there's kind of two opposing views. One says, let's make it as easy as possible so that I step into that. Even when I make things easy, I don't always step in and do them. And there's this kind of like tenacity, like, I'm going to step in, I'm going to do this, that is appealing to me on the, hey, let's do something that absolutely sucks so that I can push through and say, well, I did
that. Because you have two modes. You have beast mode, when you, all of your stuff's at a high, all of your energy, you have all of your health,
testosterone's like pumping,
then you're Goggins it, go punch something in the face.
Right.
But then you have those lulls where, you know, you've overextended yourself. You're this close to not being able to handle it. Then you give yourself some ease, so you recover. And it's almost like with running, right? When you're running and you're doing the sprint, and then you get to a point where you're like, okay, I'm going to either continue this pace and injure myself, give myself a 2-minute breather, and then I'm going to start sprinting again once I've recovered and got my breath back.
So it's both and, not either or. You're exactly. saying it's part of the rhythm.
Yeah. And you know the motive. Yep. And again, that martyr in you will be like, no, I'm going to be strong. And then your leg rips in half, and then you can't run it at all.
Well, it's so one of the things that I've heard people that follow kind of his advice is they'll go into the gym and they'll find somebody in the gym that's on the treadmill or on the thing before them, and they'll jump on and they'll go, I'm not getting off till they get off, as like a competition.
Oh, not on the
themselves.
Same equipment they're on.
No. No, that would have been super awkward. No, you know, whether you're on the treadmill and they're three
and get a beat down.
Yeah. three treadmills down, and they've already been on for, you know, whatever, 15 minutes or whatever. Or sometimes you get on and then you wait for the next person to get on. You're all right, I'm not getting off till they get off. Now, sometimes that backfires on you because they were just on for a 5-minute warm up. You're like, we're out of here with an easy one. But
and then some young buck who's training for the Olympics gets on there, and then you're screwed.
Well, but his whole point is, like, you know, it in doing some of that stuff, is it's more of a mental game than it is a physical game in those spots. When Sam and I were away at Kalahari, we went to the gym together, and we walked in, and there was an older guy on the treadmill, and he had been on there for a while. And I wasn't thinking this way, but I got to finish my first 20 minutes, and homie's still going. And he's dripping. And I'm like, I'm done. 20, 25 minutes. My exercise ring is closed on my Apple Watch. And then I'm looking over. I'm going, all right, this just turned into a competition. I'm not getting off until, you know, grandpa over there gets off. Yo,
he outlasted you.
Homie went like another 35 minutes. Sam was like, I'm done with my workout. And I'm like, yeah, me too.
Well, if my wife didn't come, I'd totally stick with you.
it was so funny, though. But yeah, I mean, anything to give yourself kind of that mental edge, if that makes sense. I loved in The Last Dance, you know, listening to some of the stuff they said about Michael Jordan, that he would make up trash talk that the other players said that they never said, just so he could go out and have the edge over them mentally. And one of the players was saying that, you know, Jordan came out and he goes, I heard what you said. And he goes, I didn't say anything. But he was all in his own head about it, to give himself that mental edge. And I think that's part of it. When we do the hard things in life, whether it's a 5K or, you know, a tough decision at work, or whether it's making a huge change, shifting, whether it's closing down a company, starting a new one, whatever that is, you know, those are big decisions that have ramifications attached to them. Sometimes you got to give yourself the mental edge. You got to kind of psych yourself up for making that decision and, you know, be ready for whatever comes.
Yeah. And sometimes I don't know how much of this is biological programming. I try to figure out, like, biologically, what was this supposed to situate me for and give me an advantage on? And what you said, like, you know, you're outwitting some of your body chemicals and have to work against it. So if, you know, you hear what we say, like, maybe you're better that when you are on the cripple, that you give yourself some trash talk and to keep you going. And then sometimes, like, there's some personality types that I'd be like, I'm not playing with myself anymore. That I'm mean, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I think back to when I was playing sports in high school, or, you know, I did do a 5K once, just for this show, actually. and I know that when I go to that spot and I feel like I'm maxed, you know, I can remember it's seventh grade. My dad coached our basketball team. It was PAL basketball, whatever, in-town basketball. And I was pretty good. You know, I played on the travel team after the season and stuff like that. But I remember he used to make us run suicides with our hands over our heads, like straight over our head. And all the other teams would scrimmage at the end. Nobody would, you know, do that. They made fun of us and whatever. And our team did it. And we, you know, that's what coach told you to do. And you were just about young enough that you didn't like question the authority or whatever. And that year we were in second place. We beat the first place team and we went to the championship game and it went into triple overtime and we won. And my dad credits and did for years, the stupid suicides with our hands over our head. Cause he's like, you were still playing defense with your hands up with three overtimes and the other team was dragging. But it in those spaces, I can remember as a kid, and I can remember in high school when they made us do football, man, we had to run. We had this hill out back of the football field. And I think it was Wednesdays and you had your pads on. You just had to practice. You're hot. And we had to run a hill for every penalty that we got. Sometimes a lot of them. And you're going up this hill and, man, after a full day of practice, like, you have to will yourself up that hill, especially, you know, some of the big boys. And I was one of the big boys, but there were some boys that, you know, had me by plenty. And to watch them, you know, puke halfway up the hill and stuff and then keep going, you really have to have the mental talk. And I can remember, you know, saying things to myself to push myself, like, come on, you're going to be able to do it. Like, that self-talk has to be there to push yourself through the pain threshold or you quit.
Yeah, for sure. And we were talking earlier. I had somebody was questioning my increase in lipids, my cholesterol that I eat with this keto thing. Yeah. And it's a real argument. Like, if you just took where I'm at right now, or you're not where I'm at, let's just say you weren't doing everything that I'm doing and you started eating the stuff that I do, you'd probably die. Right. And it's, you know, I changed my default settings so much that the normal stuff doesn't apply to me anymore. Right. So, you know, your deal where you guys are running suicides, it puts you on a level that it was no longer in comparison to anybody who you're competing with.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned the lipid levels and your cholesterol, right? So I'll have to find it. I watched a clip on YouTube of a documentary that talked about how it's actually sugar and starch that causes heart disease, all this sort of stuff. They rattle it off. And it's conspiracy theory that American Heart Association, you know, a bunch of these organizations all kind of came together to push the petroleum-based medicines and stuff like that. And in order to do that, they had to convince people that fats were bad for them. And so you had all the push against you can't eat eggs and you get all that stuff. And then all of a sudden eggs are really good for you and you can't eat this and you can't eat that, but it's going to make your cholesterol high. And I've heard this from several people that your cholesterol level, and you can Google it for yourself, but your cholesterol level, according to the American Heart Association, all this sort of stuff is the thing that directly correlates to, you know, people talk about heart attacks, like, oh, you got to get that under control. But in this documentary, they had scientists and doctors and stuff making the argument that it was actually fat around your vital organs, your begins with a V. I don't know what that fat is, but the
visceral.
Yes. The inside, not the outside. Not the light stuff, but around your liver and around your heart and around that sort of stuff. And that all comes from starches and sugars and stuff like that, that causes the issues with those, the And they had a lot more science explaining to it, right. But you mentioned it and I kind of thought to myself, oh yeah, I just saw that clip.
Yeah. Cause it comes with a responsibility. So I eat a bunch of stuff that typically, if it goes going through your blood, it would clog up your arteries and whatever. Sure. If I was in an inflamed state, if I'm not in an inflamed state, then we're not in the same position. Like my cell walls and linings are not inflamed, which is swelled up, right? You have less space when it's swelled up. So I might have we might eat the exact same thing and you'll take a consequence and my body will be just like, you know,
whatever.
Got this. Yep.
Yeah. No, it's wild.
But I do freak out the doctor's office when we do blood.
Can I ask what your,
I don't even remember.
HDL like, or LDLs even... are.
they call me every time and says, you got to come back in here. We got to get you on some medications. I'm like, no, you know what? Talk to the doctor. I'm good.
It's like 10 to 1, isn't it? You're bad to good.
It made them call on a special day.
I was going to say, usually they start worrying around like 3 to 1 in the ratio, 4 to 1 in the ratio. But I'm imagining if you're eating that much fats and meats and stuff like that. It's
like almost all. But, yeah. the new stuff, like I used to do a lot of stuff that probably wasn't healthy when I started out, like the bacons and whatever, because I just needed extra fat. I mean, I couldn't get it in natural diet. I found a whole lot of proteins and fats in nuts and whatever. So I don't know if
avocados.
Yeah.
Which they pulled the ban on.
I bought so many avocados. My entire
fridge. Did you freeze them?
Yes. Yes. They're in the bottom part of the refrigerator, but I thought we were going to have none. So I bought all I can. I was like doing the TP rush for avocados.
That's so funny. I saw that and I thought of you because I know that's where you get a lot of your fat from avocados.
But nuts. I've been eating a lot of nuts.
What kind? What are your favorites?
Walnuts, pecans, and almonds.
Okay. So you don't do cashews or?
No.
Too heavy?
I don't know. There's some things like walnuts I don't even like that much because it leaves that weird aftertaste. I agree. So I'm an almond guy. That's my go-to.
Okay. Cool. Well, when Joe, to steer back because I derailed us,
Did
you see that? to go back to what we're talking about, you know, and doing the hard things, reevaluating our year and trying to, you know, look at some of those spots. What's the last thing that Joe looks at that, man, in your life you had to persevere through that you set a goal or some, not necessarily an adversity that came your way, but something that you targeted, I want to do that. And then you pushed yourself through. You didn't want to finish it. It sucked. And Joe,
well, this is more of a psychological version of that.
Sure.
But I mean, we all have these things about our personalities, and you see sometimes, like with actors and politicians, they always fall victim to that thing, right? Yeah. It's part of their personality, and you put the temptation close enough, and they're going to take it every stinking time,
yeah,
right? And so, I have some persistent ones where, you know, like we'll do like road rage. I can't help myself. You put me in the right position and I'm getting all pissed off at the driver in front of me. No matter how much I calm myself down and say, hey, I got nowhere to be. I get mad. Like injustices boil my freaking blood. And so, but I've tried to maintain composure and control in certain circumstances, but I'm telling you, it gets me and I can't self-control. Self-control is it.
So how do you push through that?
A lot of guilt and shame and, you know, going back after the fact and say, you know, you acted like a 14-year-old. Are you proud of that, dude?
Yeah. Totally.
That's a
lot. Totally. I think, for Sam and I, we look at, you know, some of the stuff with a lot of ours has been, you know, physical. She's pushing through this 5K. I go back to a few years ago when I lost a bunch of weight and I can remember being on men's retreat and the guys were crushing pizza and Taco Bell and all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, all I want to do is eat one slice of pizza. And I knew if I ate one slice of pizza, I was eating that whole pie.
Yeah.
And pushing through that while everybody was crushing stuff was, and those sort of scenarios do, like where you put yourself at a certain point, it's kind of like taking an alcoholic too soon to the bar. Like you don't want to do that because chances are they may not have the fortitude or the strength to withstand it. At some point, hopefully they're going to grow to a place where, hey, I can go in there and yes, other people may have a drink and that's not going to bother me. But early on, you certainly don't want to tempt fate too soon.
Right.
And so, you know, I was 3 months in at that point and it was just like greasy pizza and it was hard.
All right. So once you sort of identified what your thing is, what you know that if put, you know, that you don't have enough self-control, mm-hmm. that if you were put in that situation, it would murder you. You know, like it could be somebody who's impulsive with, you know, money and gambling and risk taking. Sure. It could be someone, you know, sexually with pornography and that. I mean, just think of your favorite person that you've seen in the spotlight and watch the ones that fell like a, you know, a gazelle, and you can probably profile like 8 different things that'll take you down. So once you know those things about yourself, I mean, do you tempt fate with your, you know, if yours is pizza and
it depends. You know, Bishop always says to us, don't touch the gold, the glory, or the girls, the 3 G's, right?
Okay.
Don't get messed up with the money. Don't pursue, you know, put it in its rightful spot. It's a source. It's a resource, not the source,
right,
kind of deal. And then, you know, I'm married to one girl and you don't entertain that. I tend not to do individual meetings with ladies, or if I do, I include Pastor Joanne in those. That's all a safeguard, not because I don't trust myself to sit in there, not because I'm like, oh my gosh, if I have a meeting with, you know, if I go and have Panera Bread with, you know, this person from church, all of a sudden this fling's gonna happen. But there's certain safeguards you put in place just out of health. And it doesn't mean that.
But you know, those are safe ones where you could trust yourself to be able to exhibit self-control.
And as you know yourself, and you know, I've shared from the platform and I've shared, I believe on the podcast at times, but I walked through a season in Bible school where guys were like tons of guys were wrestling with pornography. And the joke we used to make all the time, it's 95% of guys have looked at pornography. The other 5% are liars, and, you know, own it and then get the accountability you need, figure out the things that you need to do. And so I had an accountability partner, and we put special software on each other's computers that would tell us the web history, and you couldn't delete it. And when you had that moment where you're feeling tempted, you know, hey, can we go for a walk? It's 2 a.m. I'm like, yeah, but if I don't go for a walk right now, like I'm going to go in my room and do something I don't want to do. Right. And so you put those safeguards, and you need those early on, but, you know, fast forward and, you know, my wife and I watch certain series on Netflix, and there'll be a scene that'll pop up or whatever. And I inevitably, everybody knows what it's about to come. Like it's coming on your screen. Bow, it's about, yeah.
Bow, bow. Right.
So we're watching.
I'm terrible for you. Yeah. I'm just the wrong
person. It's okay. But we're watching Yellowstone, and like these scenes will pop up, and you know, they're coming. And so I will either I'll have my phone and I'll just glance at something on my phone till the scene's over, or I'll excuse myself to go get something to out of the kitchen. I'll go fill up a glass of water, or hey, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And I use those as my break spots simply because, yeah, could I sit there and watch it and it probably not affect me? Probably at this point. But I've trained myself and I've done well enough at this point I just don't want to put that in because I know what happens in here. And so, and I don't want to go back to anything like that. So
see, to me, that's what the definition of humility is. Somebody who values one thing so much that even if they know that it's not at risk, they don't take the chance at all, even if the risk is almost zero.
And the whole thing, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, that just limits your life or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, could save my marriage. You know what I mean? Right. There's a reason Andy Stanley does this great teaching on guardrails. When you drive on the highway and you go around a big curve with a cliff over the side, they put a guardrail at the top. There's a reason for that. They don't want you to die. And is it wrong for you to drive close to the edge of the cliff? No, you're probably safe. If you drive over by where the guardrail is, you can drive on the shoulder. Sure. You can put that guardrail halfway down the mountain and it's not going to do any good. And that's what a lot of people do in their life. It's like, oh, I'll be fine. And they put that thing down and it doesn't save them. They, you know, you don't want to drive the ambulance at the bottom of the hill. I want to put a guardrail at the top so I don't fall off.
Right.
And I think that's the difference. But, you know, so when I look at those things, you know, figuring out how to push through and where to place the guardrail in my life. And sometimes I've overcompensated and man, I was really strict with that. And I had my guardrail way too far and it was, you know, limiting certain things that were healthy for me to do. But I was so afraid. And so you have to find that tension. And sometimes it's good. That's why we have mentors and counselors that'll say, you know, you probably are okay if you do this. Like this is not, you're way overcompensating in that department. And we had, you know, guys that did that, you know, threw out their computer. And I'm like, how are you going to do your project, bro? Like, right. You know, they're like, wow, you know, no. And you go through stuff like that and people will overcompensate, you know. Christians were notorious for that. Like in the 90s, they would throw out all of their movies and smash all their, you know, CDs and DVDs and like, oh, you know, this is, it's all evil. And I'm like, oh, I mean, I suppose you can do that if you'd like, or, you know, I don't want any TV, you know, Sam and I only have one TV in our house. Could we have more? Sure. But we don't want the idea of having a TV in every bedroom and, you know, stuff like that. That's how I grew up. You know, I could watch whatever I want in my room. I play video games till all hours. And, you know, but in our house, she was like, I don't want to do that. And we talked about it. And, you know, it's really great. We can monitor the kids' screen time. Like, we know exactly what they're watching because there's one TV and it's right in the main room. And we have one computer and one iPad. So we know who's on it and for how long and all that stuff. So it makes managing some of that stuff. Now, I realize my kids are young. There's going to come a season here where, you know, they're each going to need devices and they're going to need those things. And we're going to have to navigate what that looks like and at what age and all of that. But realistically, you know, their innocence and the ability to help them navigate those things in a healthy way. I don't want to keep them from stuff forever. Like, they have to learn to say no for themselves. But right now, like, my 7-year-old doesn't need to decide whether he's going to watch this or this. Like, right. I'm going to decide.
Well,
but,
now,
but when he's 13, he's going to have to make some choices.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like your, like you were saying earlier about when you were at that retreat and the pizza pie was calling you and that would be your undoing. If pizza equals the risk of virtue, then your hunger was probably close to overcoming.
Well, it's not just pizza. I mean,
analog.
Anything at that point.
Corn dog, pizza.
Yeah, pizza, corn dog, cheesesteak, didn't matter. I like wanting the food like that. And anytime I've been in a health cycle, even when I was playing sports and I was probably in the best shape of my life, you know, I was never crazy strict on the dieting end of things because I either played sports or positions that didn't really matter.
Right.
And in high school, sometimes you're growing fast enough that, yeah, you can get away with crushing McDonald's and whatever else you want. And well, going
your, to the gym. Your hunger for pizza was my double middle fingers of the guy who just cut me off.
Correct.
That same hunger that I know on the downslope, there's very little risk.
Because you drive a Tesla, you can do two fingers, not one. You don't have to keep your hand on the wheel.
I can. But I have to deprive myself and really coax myself into it. I'm kind of thankful that that's my department because it's not gambling. It's not those other things that can have, you know, huge consequences.
Yeah. And ultimately, though, they all, and you hit it earlier, they all come back to the same root. Like, when we're pushing through something hard, it's a matter of humbling ourselves, getting the help that we need, the accountability that we need, putting the things in place so that we'll do the hard thing that we don't want to do. It's pride that keeps us from asking for the help or stepping into that thing or putting boundaries on ourselves so that we're not giving two fingers, but one, limiting things. And I think the crux of it all. So it doesn't matter any hard thing you want to do. Pride's not going to be the avenue to get you there. It's going to be humility. And that reminds me of a scripture. Boom.
We're back.
We're back. God says he gives grace to the humble, but he brings low the proud. And I want more grace from God on my life. So by humbling myself, by allowing myself, and it's not necessarily, some people take humility to be like, oh, I'm the worst of the worst. And they use a lot of self-deprecating and it's actually reverse pride.
Yeah.
You're devaluing what God's actually put in you and doing. And so then on the flip side of that, you know, we've all met the person that's pretty sure of themselves and you think, man, like, you know, you put your pants on just like I do. Right. And there's such a slight difference between confidence, cocky, kind of bravado, that certain people have. And then the humility, that kind of quiet confidence. And I say it like this to people, a lion never has to tell anybody they're a lion. So if I had to go around everybody being like, I'm in charge, I'm the, you know, if I had to tell my kids all the time, I'm the dad, I ain't the dad. And I know that's a scary proposition, but at some level, if a lion has to go around announcing it's a lion to everybody, ain't it a lion?
So I was in Cleveland last night and I don't know if you've ever driven in Cleveland, but the drivers in Cleveland are stupid. So the temptation for me to like really get aggressive in that. So I think that when I'm up there, I'm like, thank goodness I do not live in a big city because this would be the every day of my life. I move far south from stupidity. If I might even drive, go even further south if this area gets.
You need to get a ranch in Montana.
I would.
Or something.
Yeah, that's me. Little cabin in the hills. You know why I did it. If you ever wonder why I needed exclusivity with nature, it's because I couldn't be around other people. I couldn't tolerate myself. So there you go.
But so some things you can't avoid. Like I have to eat. Like at some level, I mean, I can fast for a certain period of time, but at some level, I'm going to have to eat. Some level, you're going to have to drive around other people.
Yeah.
So some of our temptations are built in, right? You're going when I was wrestling with pornography, like summertime was coming. Like I can avoid it on the TV screen, but when you go to the public pool, you go to the beach, like it's there.
Right.
And so you have to train. We had this saying, bounce the eyes is what we would say. It's not the first look that kills you. It's the second. And so it's, and just keep going. And we, to this day, I will run into guys that were part of that. And I just have to say, bounce the eyes, fellas, you know, depending on what situation we're in. And that was, but the truth is some of those things are going to be in front of us. The difficult things, like I'm going to have to make breakfast tomorrow. And then it becomes a matter of, well, what safeguards do I put in place? What accountability and how do I navigate that so that I'm making the right choices? In the same way, you know, you're going to have to drive, and maybe at some point Youngstown Studio will have a driver that will drive Joe everywhere around. And Joe doesn't have to worry about it.
Maybe, or we'll be in a virtual reality and I'm going to program my VR that there's no driving. It's all car done. It's going to be great.
Or that Joe's totally at peace.
Yes, it doesn't matter. Don't even look at the steering wheel.
Now, do you get upset because people don't drive fast enough, or do you get upset because people are just bad drivers?
A little bit. The big thing is when you get cheaters, people who don't want to wait in the line that you just waited in, they cut off, and that's an injustice, and I'm like so mad at them.
All right. At some point, one day, we're going to have to go down the Jersey Shore on a Saturday, and the Garden State Parkway is a parking lot. And by parking lot, I mean thousands of cars. And it should take you 45 minutes to go from where the house I grew up in, 45 minutes, maybe an hour max, to go from there to the beach. But on a Saturday, everyone in New Jersey is going to the beach. Some people are going to houses, some people are going for the day, but everyone. And everyone is leaving the beach. And most of these places are one road in and one road out.
Right.
And then the Garden State Parkway and the Atlantic City Expressway and a bunch of those, they just become parking lots. And I have been where it's taken 4-5 hours to get somewhere that's 45 minutes.
Please don't.
But you get into these lines and then you get somebody on a motorcycle.
Yes.
And they'll zip.
That's the guy.
And every time I just want to open my door.
Yeah, I've mentally murdered people and not in real life. But in my head, down. Yes.
I feel that because I've been in that. I'm like, you got
to be kidding me. Don't encourage me. You're supposed to tell me. Control. Control what? Those thoughts. Bounce the eyes. Bounce the eyes.
Yes, but that would be a situation to put Joe to the test.
Yes, it would. And I will fail. So don't even do that. I'm ill-trained. I don't have the temperance for this. I swear to you.
Oh, it's so funny. We would play all kinds of games and, you know, you're trying to do everything you can to pass the time, but then it's a billion degrees outside. And so, you know, you can't put the windows down. You can't. And so it starts to get, he touched me and I went, are we there yet? And it
makes it even worse.
Yeah. So
what I tell myself, and this is the only thing that works for it, is that when I'm in the car, I say to myself, I can't wait till I can find somebody to let go in front of me. Help somebody out. I don't have anybody, they do. And then so if someone cuts me off, like, oh, go ahead. And I pretend like I just let them. And then it suits right in my brain and I don't get all mad. But then later on, my brain thinks like, you didn't really let them. They took it. They did it before you said that.
For me, I make people eat things.
What?
So
wait a
minute. So when I was... strict dieting. I was end of 2017 into 2018. I lost 70 pounds. And that was right around the time Pastor Mike started with me in September. And we went to breakfast the one morning. And I'm like, I had my eggs and some, you know, like a side of spinach and, you know, real, real good. I eat everything. He eats an omelet. I get him a side of bacon, all this stuff. And we were at Landmark and he ate this huge meal and he's like, oh, I'm so full. And I was like, you know what? I want to watch you eat a donut. I can't have it, but I'm going to live vicariously
food eating. I'm a proxy food eater. I have never seen this.
I'm like my wife is so tiny and she eats whatever she wants.
All right. So here's my analogy. I'm in traffic and I pay the guy next to me, go beat up the guy, right? Does that seem right to you?
No.
All right, go ahead. Not. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, but it's totally like in my head, I'd be like, man, I really want to eat that donut. You know, can you eat that donut?
So your wife, she can eat anything?
She can eat anything. It doesn't matter. The first, one of our first big dates we ever went on, I took her to Charlie Brown's Steakhouse. I forget how many years ago, almost Sunday we'll be together 20 years that we'll have dated from our dating anniversary. And I took her to Charlie Brown's Steakhouse. Had to be for her 16th or 17th birthday, maybe 15th. I don't know. She orders this like 16 ounce porterhouse steak. And I'm like, really? And I got the potato the size, crushed it. And I was like, I'm in trouble. I'm about to spend a lot of money in this relationship. But she's been that way. Like regular food, she's not a sweet tooth by any means, but she'll crush all sorts of stuff, but never the stuff that I'm like, oh, you should eat that for me. So I can't do it to her, because I'd be like, oh, you know, you want to eat ice cream? She'll get a, you know, pint of handles or a quart of handles or whatever. And a serving size of ice cream is when the spoon hits the bottom of the container. Sam eats like two bites.
And puts it back.
Puts it back.
I'm the same way.
It'll last for months. It'll get freezer burnt and she'll throw it out. And I'm like, I will skip the meal and eat the ice cream. My whole life.
So let me tell you what you just undid in this. And it's not what you were talking about, but what you alluded to.
Yeah.
So I think the theory is that once you get married, you don't have to celebrate your dating anniversaries anymore, because they graduate into real anniversaries.
And they years, do.
They do.
Yeah.
So you don't have to celebrate them anymore.
Yeah. I mean, we've never celebrated our dating anniversary, but we were just saying that recently we were like, wow, this February is going to be 20 years that we've been together. That's kind of crazy. We've been in each other's lives for 20 years. We went back and looked at some old pictures or whatever, but we're not like going out to dinner or anything like that.
I just want to reinforce that, because Debbie's going to hear this and she's like, see, Doug celebrates their dating anniversary.
Well,
so I needed that. Thank
you. No. We've never celebrated the dating anniversary. I know some people that do, but it's just one of those things where you're like, wow, you know, 20 years is kind of a significant amount of time to be in somebody's life. And, you know, we went back and we always said we started dating at 16 and 14, but realistically, I had just turned 17 and I was a junior and she was a freshman. So we were going back and looking at pictures like, we were babies. We were tiny.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do when your kid gets to the age that you were when you dated? Because you were, you felt
Charlotte's
adult, right?
Charlotte's like 3.5 years away from being 14.
Yeah. And did you feel like an adult when you were at that age?
No, but no? I mean, probably at the time. But looking back now, I'm like, whoa, in the world.
Yeah, I was making those kind of decisions.
And yeah, I mean, I can't speak for my wife's parents, but, you know, realistically, I invited her to go to prom because I was a junior that year. She was a freshman. And so she was my date to prom. And I know her mom enjoyed the, hey, you know, my daughter gets to go to prom. I'm sure that was a lot of fun for them. But I remember after prom, it was kind of like, what's your intentions with our daughter? Like, it was
really,
because I'm at the time I'm 17 going on 40. I'm getting ready to go to Bible school. Like, I'm feeling called to ministry. Like, I was not your normal 17-year-old. I was thinking way down the road. And I was like, I'm going to marry your daughter.
Wrong thing to say, brother.
Look at me. And I was like, the Lord told me I'm going to marry your daughter. and they were like, you know, I just remember in their front office there, I don't know what the total response was, but it was not the right thing for me to say.
No, turn it down, brother. Just step back.
But we did.
You did too. You were right.
So, but I look back at that time and I think, man, you know, as my kids are getting older, I'm like, Charlotte, you got to be at least 35. I hope that, you know, I will have raised my kids to make, to do the hard things, to make the tough decisions and to do things right so that they pick a good spouse, you know?
You know, I feel worse. The person who has to describe these shows that go off in every direction, like, what would you even title this one?
Do the hard things.
Do the hard things.
Yeah.
We just kind of
we talked
back
about
to
temptation. We talked about, it's hard to be with somebody 20 years. Do the hard things.
You have it so easy. You have no idea. The pizza is hard.
Yeah, though. It is. Bounce your eyes, Joe. Well, good luck to whoever's doing this show, and we'll see you back here next week.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.